Radio Gorgeous presents Gorgeous Lives. Bieber, a lot of us grew up worshipping that shop. Black and gold, dark and mysterious, leopard skin sofas, palm trees, black treacly walls, and very glamorous shop assistants with black lipstick, dark blue nail varnish and black nail varnish. This was the early 1970s. This was before punk. This was about self-expression, rock and roll, 1930s glamour. So today we are very, very excited to be interviewing Barbara Halaniki on Gorgeous Lives, creator, visionary, legend and fashion designer. Barbara Halaniki, OBE, invented Bieber, which was the first ever lifestyle store which literally no one has ever surpassed. Can you imagine inventing black nappies, black baby grows and baked beans with Bieber on the label? I mean, she is just the coolest woman on earth. So Donna, our intrepid Radio Gorgeous reporter, tracked her down in London's W10, where she spends part of every 6 weeks. The other part of her life is living in Miami and beautiful Art Deco hotels, which she creates, bright pink and leopard skin. And she's here today to talk all about the beginning of her life and her love of fashion and her work in Paris with fashion designers to now still being a designer in her golden years. Over to Barbara Halaniki on Radio Gorgeous. Limbo down, the lost embrace, stumble around. I say go, she say yes. You can guess the rest. Oh, catch that buzz. Love is the drug I'm thinking of. Oh, Radio Gorgeous supports women. Women support Radio Gorgeous.
So yeah, so I'm here with designer, artist, photographer, visionary, legend, fashion icon, Barbara Halaniki, OBE.
Oh, yes. How about
yes.
that?
How about that? How about them apples?
I tried to get that on my new passport, renewal of passport, but it was going to take so many forms. I just gave up.
But that would be great
yes,
to have on
your exactly.
passport.
No, but in America they wouldn't know what it
True.
Was.
Because you are based in Miami now.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah,
so
on the beach. I'm a beach bum.
Oh.
Yeah.
And there's no better beach.
Oh, it's amazing, yeah. And it's very urban down there, so
yes.
I enjoy it.
I want
okay.
to start out with your riotous shot to fame in the Bieber store on Kensington and
right.
what brought you there.
Well, I was at anything to get away from home in those days. People didn't live at home and anything to come up to London from Brighton, where I was at art school, doing a design course. And my teacher said, if you really want to start, it'd be much quicker if you did illustration, as you're always drawing. And so I got myself a job with a studio in London, in Covent Garden, when it was real vegetables and so on. Down below, it was very rough. And I kind of worked my way up from tea making, which people don't do nowadays, do they?
Nobody oh, wants no. to be the tea girl.
To actually working with all the newspapers, freelancing, and working in Paris, doing all the collections and seeing all the collections, and which was an amazing experience. But in those days, it was really very old, well, not old women's, but kept women
mm-hmm.
with
mm-hmm.
wealthy husbands. For somebody who was like 21, I thought, oh, God, this is just awful.
Yeah, because it was sort of society-wise.
Yes, yeah. There were special clothes. Mm. And so sort of, I don't know. All I wanted to do is to see clothes and cotton and sort of natural fabrics, not all these fancy taffetas and so on. So, you know, I was pretty experienced at the whole fashion world. I mean, I've been to Balenciaga shows, to Dior shows, and the whole caboodle. I was earning money, and I had nothing to wear. I was always like the poor relation, you know. It was just so depressing. So the urge to do something, you know, for people of my own age, maybe a little younger. And when I met my husband, who was in advertising, Fitz, he said, I think you should get back to designing. As he was in advertising, he said, mail order is the future. Because it's like now, really, web.
Amazing.
Isn't it?
You have been at the vanguard in everything that you've done.
Yeah. Do you think so? Gosh.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mail order.
Yes.
A lifestyle brand.
Yes, I suppose so.
But it's even really, corporate rating. The good, the bad,
yes.
You know, whatever.
Yeah.
But you have been at the vanguard of all of that. So mail order was because you could do it at home. You know, you guys could start that yourself.
Yes, and we did, and it was a nightmare.
Yeah, there were sort of some failed attempts. And
because I had friends on the newspapers, they'd say, you know, do a drawing and we'll put it in, but not advertising, you know, freebie. And we would get sort of like 100, but we weren't making any money. And it was a nightmare to get it done. And
so you had to fill orders and ship them out.
Yes, but to make the stuff, you know.
Yeah.
And then we were up all night shipping the stuff. And we're just about to give it up when Felicity Green rings me up. I used to work for her. She was on the Mirror. And she said, Barbara, I want a dress. I said, okay. I even went and did it without Fitz knowing. And we talked about this dress. And she said, I want it for 25 shillings. I said, of course. And when I got home, Fitz said, don't ever price anything. We're not going to make any money at all on this one. We made a halfpenny, but we did sell 17,000 to work that out.
Yes, 25 shillings.
17,000 shillings. Halfpennies on 17,000. Yeah.
Wow.
We were in it.
Take care of the pennies and the pounds, you know, look after themselves, that kind of thing.
And then we opened a shop in Abingdon Road where we used that as a storage, and it was just beautiful premises.
It was an old chemist shop.
Yes, old chemist shop that the V&A had taken all the interiors out. I think it's somewhere in storage because they were so special.
Oh, wow.
Black and gold.
Black
Hello.
And gold.
Here we go.
Something sparked.
And then, you know, we kind of painted it dark and put some curtains up and put up the music. And it was never stop. Oh, my God.
And when you moved to Kensington High Street, like five floors.
Yes. It was our fourth stop.
Okay.
So every kind of 2 years when we were bursting at the seam.
You'd find a new premise.
Yes. Yeah. And very low rents, which today is very difficult. That's why people don't survive in shops. And that's why the growth of the websites, really.
Low overheads.
Yeah. Kill you. He used to find this amazing. He'd just go out at lunchtime and come back and say, oh, found another shop. I found a shop. Come on. Let's go up there. See if you like it. And he said, oh, I've just been talking to the owner. And he says to me, he's a chronologist. And he looked at my head and he measured it. And he said, you're all right. You can take the shop, but I have to see your wife's head first.
Did your head pass muster?
Yes, it did. Can you imagine that happening today?
Well, you make some of your decisions based on, you know, astrology.
Yeah.
So, you know, why not chronology?
Yeah. The banks didn't seem to come into it.
Exactly. So it started with the fantastic pink gingham dress.
Yeah. And it goes on and on and on and on.
But from the pink gingham, we go dark.
Oh, yes. Tremendous. Yeah.
I mean, your girls in the shops with blue and black lipstick and nail polish. I mean, this must have been outrageously fantastic.
Yes. It kept all the grown-ups out. They didn't know what was going on in there. It was like they'd stand outside and say, that black hole, you know. All
that's
the manufacturers
fantastic.
Used to come. They were dying to come in because they wanted to copy this, but they didn't dare to come into the shop.
So it was basically to scare off the grown-ups.
Yes.
Yeah, no one over 28 was ever in there.
Oh, 28 was too old. I had to keep my age very quiet in the second shop. They once caught a shoplifter, and the girls came up to me and said, and she's very old. And I said, well, how old is she? And she said, he says she's 28. And I thought,
ooh, ghastly. Wow. Oopsie.
Eight. Oh, yeah, very old. I think I was 26 and a half.
I mean, it was a magnet because there was nothing else out there like
this. Absolutely.
And it was a magnet for men, women, you know, the beauties, the rock stars, everyone hung out there.
But the rock stars weren't famous then, you see. There were so many people growing at that stage.
So there were just some guys in a band.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, your friends in a band.
The girls in the shop became incredibly beautiful that worked for us because they were in the clothes all the time and playing with the makeup. And because Fitz hated shopping, I used to drag him around Paris, I always made sort of very comfortable sofas and things for the lads.
So they could sit and pretend they weren't there. Uh-huh. You and Fitz had a real partnership. What were your different roles in Biba?
Oh, I was completely creative and ran that side of it. And he was completely what is called marketing today, selling and how to sell and the financial bit. And
sort of more business.
Completely,
matters.
Yes.
Yeah, he was the business
and,
head.
I mean, when we went to America, he was incredible. Incredible salesman, actually. He wouldn't just sell one. He would sell like 100 stores in one go. He said,
wow.
Oh, I can't be bothered with one.
Yeah, I don't have time.
Yeah.
Right.
No, we had to work really hard because the demand was so great and we to keep up with it.
Yeah.
I mean, we learned the hard way.
Again, you were saying the over, you know, expansion to keep up with that and to keep up with that financially.
Yes.
Is a tricky
lots
balance.
Of cash flow.
Yeah.
We square foot was the biggest in Europe, do you know?
One
stage. Yeah. And we were number two after Tower of London and Buckingham Palace was number three.
Wow. That's impressive.
That's something, isn't it?
That's yes, that was definitely a feather in your cap and your floppy hat, as it were. Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, incredible. We have incredible help at the beginning from all the people on Ready, Steady, Go on the program that came on every Friday, a music program that discovered all the big stars now, like the Beatles, the whole lot. The Stones,
so, yeah, it was sort of seamless with that. In terms of, you know, it was zeitgeist, it was pop culture, it was youth culture
Absolutely. All
coming together and feeding, you know, that was sort of the social media of the time.
Absolutely.
As it were.
And there seemed to be incredible how the word got out. It must have been by telephone. I don't know. It was incredible.
Yeah, well, someone would come down to London and then, you know, go back home and have this one piece.
Yes.
Because you were also, again, on the vanguard of affordable fashion for young
Absolutely,
people.
Absolutely, yes, because Fitz worked that out. He said a girl who was living in London, she would be earning £9 a week. She'd spend £3 for living, £3 for not eating, can you imagine?
Exactly.
And £3 in Biba.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed doing that because I do things for George now, and it's the same sort of
it's
attitude.
It's the same attitude.
Marvelous.
You don't have the snob appeal. Yeah.
Well, we got it in the end. In fact, you know, it was came up from bottom, and then the top started coming down, which is so interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, they wanted a piece of that.
Yeah.
Well, also, it wasn't available to them either.
Yeah.
You know, if you think about the Diors and the Balenciagas that you were going to, I mean, that's what was available.
Yeah. America was always sort of democratic, so they were. Mm. You know, I mean, there was Barbara Streisand changing. She was pregnant and she was changing in the mass changing room. And we didn't quite know who she was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Gorgeous lives, living gorgeously.
Des cieux qui font baisser le mien, un rire qui s'éperd sur sa bouche. Voilà le portrait sans retouche de l'homme auquel j'appartiens. Quand il me prend dans ses bras, il me parle tout bas, je vois la vie en rose. Il me dit des mots d'amour, des mots de tous les jours et ça me fait quelque chose. Il est entré dans mon cœur une part de bonheur dont je connais la cause. C'est le oui par moi, moi par la oui dans la vie. Il me l'a dit, l'a juré pour la vie. Et dès que je l'aperçois, alors je sens en moi mon cœur qui
Barbara Hlinicki, creator of Biba, on RadioGorgeous.com.
And there's amazing people coming in all the time.
Wow.
And the girls in the shop were, because Fitz and I had an office right in the back, the real shopkeepers, you know. And I'd go out and say, who's been in? Oh, I don't know. This is an old man standing here trying to get a date with one of those. I said, who is it? Where is he? It's Marcello Mastroianni.
Chatting up the girls.
Yes, absolutely. Oh, no, we'd never go out with him. He's too old.
Some old man.
Yes.
Fantastic. Oh,
they were such snobs.
So picky. Well, they had the pick of London.
Absolutely.
And they all came to them, so they could.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Everyone was coming to their door.
It's really liberation of the first generation. Mm. And then the skirts went up and up and up.
You were a woman in business in the 60s. Did you semi have to, you know, hide behind Fritz in a way?
Oh, tremendous. I didn't want to come up front at all.
Yeah.
So I never had my name on it or anything like that. And how wise I was.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So where did the name Biba come from?
Oh, it's my sister's. It is a Lithuanian name called Biruta, and it's abbreviation. Nickname. Yeah.
Biba.
Yeah.
Aww.
It's incredible. Yeah.
All over the country was that poster in teenage girls' bedrooms.
Yes.
Of the thin eyebrowed, you know, doe-eyed.
Smoky eyes.
Yeah, smoky-eyed girl. Who was she?
Well, she kind of became that. It was very interesting because for a designer, you sort of plod on doing your thing. And the moment you can put it down on paper with a photographer, this creature appears. You know, this is a sort of doll, your favorite doll, what you want the doll to look like. I mean, one never was talking down to anybody. Mm. Like huge businesses nowadays, they will have 20 men around the table and they will decide.
Designed by committee.
It was really from the heart.
It was just the doll you always dreamed of as
a girl. Yes, that I never had.
And dolls. Now there she was.
Yeah, absolutely. And she became stronger and stronger and stronger. Mm-hmm. And then she took over. Because the idea was, it wasn't conscious, but just to put all the stuff out that's easy for people to put together in one place. Mm-hmm. And do your own thing with it. And the English are so great.
Yes.
They don't follow, you know, like today, everybody follows what's going on somewhere else. They do their own thing.
British dressing has always been very creative.
It's incredible.
Yeah. So why because it was real lifestyle. Makeup, soap powder, baked beans. I mean, do you want to just bring that vision through every part of your life? Is that how you live?
No, I just needed it at home. Well, when I had a baby, I thought, I don't want to dress him in all those fluffy things. They didn't even have
I want a Biba baby.
Yes, I want one with black nappies and black baby grows.
That's genius.
Everybody else was having babies and had the same problem and didn't want to go to some fancy store like Harrods or something. Mm-hmm. There were no baby shops. So that came, and then everybody started being more serious about their homes. Mm-hmm. And usually they bought vintage furniture from markets and things, which were, now they're amazing pieces. But at the time, you know, they were like, you went at 5 a.m. and bought yourself a whole house down from Brick Lane.
Wow.
Incredible stuff.
Yeah.
Art Nouveau and all periods. And so we started doing things I needed, because that's what I was doing at home. You know, sort of like lampshades, colour for the walls and fabrics and wallpapers and whatever.
Everything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which you still continue to design today.
Oh, yes.
You mentioned Art Nouveau.
Yeah.
Now, a huge influence for you. Where's that
it's
come
funny,
from?
It's funny, subconscious, because my father used to do these amazing watercolors. He was quite old. You know, he married my mother when he was 20 years older. And he came from the period, and my mother used to tell me how, and they were completely Art Nouveau faces and watercolors, and she said how people used to laugh at him in Poland because it was meant to be terribly avant-garde and sort of modern and, you know, risque. So that kind of went to Alphonse Mouchard, which were those lovely posters, and then Klimt. And it's funny because I have friends who are very young, and they're all going through the same stage. They don't know about the Bieber bit in America, and they just discover Klimt.
Yeah.
And when you think of all those Twilight
films,
yes, it's all that kind of Transylvania mystery. It's so interesting, isn't it?
Very cyclical.
Yeah.
Moving back to your father, you were born in Poland.
Yes.
And moved to Jerusalem, where he was assassinated.
Yes, yeah. I was born in Poland. He was Polish consul general.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sort of caught up in the very murky, bloody birth of Israel.
Yes. Yeah. Real mess at the time.
Yeah.
Still a mess, isn't it?
Yes. I read you went back recently to see his grave, which you had thought had been destroyed.
Yeah.
Did that bring some measure of peace?
It did. It was very painful there going, and I took Vital, my son, who is now 40, and he was
and named for your father.
Yes, and he was very, very supportive, and he just kept, "Mum, stop, don't take any notice of the," because people were just so sort of,
yeah.
It was very painful, but it helped. Mm. Yeah, but I went to a clairvoyant before. It's so funny. And she said, "Your father's talking to you, and he says he's not, when you go to the grave, he's not there anymore." Would you believe it? That felt really good.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it's okay.
She was really good. It's funny because the only other time I went to a clairvoyant, we ended up in Brazil, so I've never gone since.
But how did that happen?
We got to go to Brazil. She told
really?
Me.
Really? That's
yes.
You went and
she said, "We must go to Brazil."
Was that not a good thing?
No, it was wonderful, but it was kind of like, "Hello, here we are in Brazil. Why are we here?
What are we
what
doing?
Happened?"
Well, she didn't tell us what to do after that.
Yes, exactly.
We thought it would become clear, but it hasn't. Yeah. Nothing has been revealed.
Well, it doesn't in Brazil. It's fun.
Why did your family, your mother and your sister, and you end up in Brighton?
Oh, because my aunt, my wonderful aunt, who came very wealthy, decided to look after us. And she was living at the Ritz, and she said she couldn't afford to live at the Ritz if she was looking after us. She went down to Brighton, and she lived in this wonderful suite and tortured us as children.
It was kind of nice for her, like, give up her life at the Ritz. You know?
Yes, exactly.
She could have just said, "I can't afford you, full stop." You know? Okay, I'll move to Brighton.
Yes, exactly. Right. Terribly funny. She was wonderful. She had this amazing sort of 30s lifestyle. And she used to say to us, "You poor things, you will never know what a wonderful life there was in the 30s. And you got flowers from gentlemen callers and poetry."
No wonder you wanted to escape.
Yes, oh, absolutely. Yes, and they would come hand-me-down crepe. Beautiful, now I think of it, prune crepe dresses and rows of pearls. And then she would send me out to the local ice rink with my sisters, wearing a sable coat down to my... I want to die because I thought, somebody sees me. It's terrible, terrible shame.
Oh, yeah, now you're like, "Oh, okay." And going ice skating, you feel like Anna Karenina.
Yes,
you know?
Exactly.
How fab am I? So what happened to Biba? I read stories.
Oh, we did take in partners at one stage because we were doing the mail order.
Right.
And we needed capital. Mm-hmm. And they were family, Alan Farmer and his son, Ian Farmer, and they were retailers. Okay. And we were partners very, very happily with them for 6 years. We made a lot of money and a lot of money for them.
Yeah.
Kind of saved them. The area was worth nothing until we went in there. And then we get the big store and we jazz it up. And it suddenly becomes very valuable. And so property-wise, you know, that took over. It was very painful for us, you know.
Yeah.
It's awful.
But then,
again, great.
Reinvention.
Yeah.
How did that happen, that whole reinvigoration? One of your quotes is from Pavarotti, to rest is to rust.
Yes. If I rest, I rust.
Yeah, it's true. You are a body in motion, stays in motion. And are you just constantly designing and creating and looking around you?
You get very high when you work with design, you know. So invigorating. I used to think that in the 60s when everybody was having to take drugs to get high, I was high all the time.
I'm drawing. Yes. I'm high.
The next thing.
Yeah.
I haven't got a thing to wear. Zip up Radio Gorgeous and wear with pride, darling.
Saiba que isto em mim provoca imensa dor. Só privilegiados têm ouvido igual ao seu. Eu possuo apenas o que Deus me deu. Se você insiste em classificar meu comportamento diante musical, eu mesmo mentindo devo argumentar que isto é bossa nova, que isto é muito natural. O que você não sabe, nem sequer presente, é que os desafinados também têm coração. Fotografei você na minha Rolleiflex, revelou-se a sua enorme ingratidão. Poderá falar assim do meu amor.
This is Radio Gorgeous, and this is a gorgeous life.
A lot of people, you know, especially after the heartbreak of, you know, Biba.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people don't have second acts. I mean, someone like John Galliano is struggling with that now.
But he'll pick up.
He'll pick up.
It's very interesting, you see, because you spend, what, 12 years doing your thing. So you get, you know, you're at home and you're... You have this awful sort of, you've got to do this and that and the other. And then you have freedom for 12 years with a backup, with a fabulous man who just says no or yes, should do this, shouldn't do that, who's got a real foresight. And then suddenly you're thrown into the big wide world and it's absolutely amazing. What have I been doing all this
time?
With
your head down, your head down in Biba. Yeah.
And it gave... Us both, we love the freedom of working with other people. You suddenly are channeling their stuff. So it's not quite as scary as doing your own stuff. Am I going to be right? Is it going to be right?
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, sort of collaboration.
Yeah.
They're supporting
and
the
it's their responsibility. If you don't want it that way, honey,
shouldn't have asked me. Well, then, not it's my problem.
No, it is your problem. Yeah. They blame it on you. But, yeah.
But so the collaboration with Chris Blackwell.
Yes. Yeah. It was great because he would brief you and say, I want Jamaica and South Beach. Okay, yeah, Jamaica.
Yeah,
like bright colors.
Yeah. Whoop. I would say, and that your love of pattern and color, even from the, you know, the dark, smudgy, you know, muted tones to the bright.
Well, because of the light is so different there.
Mm. So tell me about your first book was A to Biba.
Yes. A to Biba was absolute agony because I met my editor, Susan Hill, who's died. She's just a really great friend. You know, after you go through a thing like writing a book, you became really, it's like your mentor, you know.
Yeah.
And I had lunch with her and she said, I think you should do a book on Biba. I said, oh, that's good, yes. And I said, who's going to write? And she said, you are. And she said,
it's a great idea.
I said, she said, it's not going to be your book, you know. If somebody else does it, so I said, okay, I'll do it. And then it's like you're suddenly sitting in a room and suddenly you need to do all the cleaning.
Yeah, yes, exactly. I'm a great procrastinator that way. Yes, I think that's the only way my house gets cleaned.
It
stuff.
Oh, look at that. Oh, I must do that. Oh, I forgot to write that thank you note 8 years ago. Yes. I must get on it.
Absolutely. It's so funny.
Also, yeah. It would been quite painful to revisit that.
Oh, yes. And that was very, very helpful, actually.
Was it cathartic?
Yes, cathartic. That's all. Yeah. Oh, it was amazing. Yeah. Because it was after Bieber, that sort of getting it all out was really mm-hmm. good.
But also, you know, the death of your husband.
Yes. But that came much later.
Such a partnership.
Yeah. I was thinking about that, and I was thinking it was so bad and so shocking because I thought I was going to die first, you know, mm-hmm. and it's like, what am I doing?
I'm not supposed to be here.
I know. I was going to die first. Yeah. I've been worrying about you all the time. And do you know, your frenemies are always the best help at a time like that. Because they're so horrible to you. They will say something like, I never forget having lunch with this person that I was working with Chris. He just said to me after Fitz died, he said, just stop feeling sorry for yourself. I'm not going to be sitting here listening to you moaning away. I mean, you know, a friend would never say that to you.
No. So and they sort of bully you out of... Yeah.
No, and then I thought, okay, I'll give myself 1 hour a day of feeling sorry for myself. It was really terrible. No, it was dreadful.
I mean, yeah. Julian Barnes just wrote a book about the death of his wife. And it's, you know, obviously so much rather have had it.
Yes.
But it's that much greater of a loss.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you think together. And even now, I mean, it's 15, 16 years. And I just to have to make a decision. It's so difficult. Mm. Terribly.
Do you channel bits in any
way? Yes. Well, he does terrible things to me.
Still. There's no escape.
Absolutely. He gives me lectures. I say, shut up, go away.
Now at least you can turn them off. Yes. Okay.
Just when he died, I'm going to have a binge with my credit card. You're not going to stop me.
Exactly. The businessman is no longer looking over my shoulder. Well, let's turn to Seamless from Biba. I love this book. And there she is again. That your Biba doll.
Yeah.
Yes, your Biba doll.
The moody.
Yes.
Little.
Yes. Romantic.
Yes. Yeah. Sarah is such a wonderful photographer.
Mm.
And she, I don't know, we seem to click together. She got it immediately. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And she was wonderful when she worked with the models because usually... photographers would just want them to be very perky and so on. She would just pretend she was taking a picture for hours on end. And when they were really tired...
And finally relaxed.
Yes. And then she'd take a picture of them. It was so funny.
They must have been quite exercised with her.
Yeah, I mean, I was like, oh,
no. And then finally snapped. Because this book is organized in, you know, so much of your work. It's hard to categorize. Yeah. You know your work. It is categorized in illustration, yours, photography, product design, one of my favorite things, wellies.
Oh, yes.
Those must be made.
Oh, really? You like them?
We're coming up to festival season, and I need like 3 pairs of those.
Oh, yeah.
You, again, at the vanguard of reinvigorating to a world-renowned state, South Beach.
Thank you, Donna, and thank you, Barbara, for gorgeous lives today. If you'd like to know more about Barbara Hulanicki, you can go to barbarahulanickidesign.com and see some fabulous photographs and more information about her work. And if you'd like to buy the book From Seamless to Biba, it's out now, Black Spring Press. More music chosen by Barbara after this.
The song they're playing on the radio.
Gorgeous Lives was brought to you by Radio Gorgeous Productions. For more information, go to radiogorgeous.com.